Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of the Cinema Wave Podcast. We are back this week to talk about House of the Dragon once again, this time episode 4 of season 2 titled The Red Dragon and the Gold. I am one of your hosts. My name is Darren Scalamoni. I am joined this week in his first House of the Dragon appearance, Mark Iacobino.
Gentlemen, Liz, I'm so sorry for taking your spot. I feel spoiled coming in on this episode, but I'm so excited to talk about it.
And also Vinny Albano.
Hello, hello.
Lots to talk about. So this was the, as I just looked at right before we started recording, this was basically the mid-season of season 2, which has already been off to a really good start. There were some liberties taken in last week's episode that I know kind of had it. Though there was still a lot of really good stuff in last week's episode, there were things towards the end that, even in our episode, we talked about that were a little, you know, stretching people's belief system a little bit. Mm-hmm. This week's episode, in pure House of the Dragon fashion, just took it to a whole nother level. There's so many things to talk about. But Mark, this is your first time obviously covering House of the Dragon on the channel. I want to know what were just sort of your broad thoughts on the episode, because there's a lot that happens and something maybe in particular that stood out to you the most in the episode.
Yeah. I mean, the shoe finally dropped. I mean, a lot of people have been saying that the tension's been turning and turning and turning, and this was finally the moment where the War of the Dragons finally started, and you see the brutality of that and the aftermath of that, and it just feels like the wind is taken out of you when you see the battlefield, you see the loss of life, and obviously the loss of almost two dragons. We don't really know if Aegon and his dragon are okay, but I really loved it. It was great. I love that the dragon rider and the dragon relationship was explored. We have those nice moments with Rhaenys and Meleys before the battle, during the battle, and then obviously when the moment happens and the dragon looks back at her. But there's a lot of really interesting subtext in this episode. You know, why does Aegon tell Vhagar to fire when he sees Aemond? Does that mean that he knew he was going to kill him and take the throne, or was it just collateral? Why does Rhaenys go back into battle when she knows she's probably outmatched by Vhagar? She decides to go back. We have earlier in the episode, I think they were implying that Corlys had a bastard, and that's what that son was, and maybe that is feeding into her mentality, because their relationship has been shown to be like really strong throughout the season, like one of those couples that is actually good in the Game of Thrones universe, and now we see that might not be true, and maybe that's why she kind of volunteered for maybe like a suicide mission. So I think there's just a lot to love about this episode. And the last 20 minutes, I was just like, my heart was beating out of my chest. And these weren't even like main characters. Like these were supporting characters. And I was still like, oh my God, I want no one to die.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot to talk about. Vinny, what was something that stood out to you, maybe that Mark didn't bring up, or just something that you definitely want to talk about in your broad thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, overall, this episode was just epic in scale. It was massive, and it was just awesome through and throughout. Not only the drama, but the epic conclusion of this episode. I think the biggest thing I want to talk about is Rhaenys is awesome. Just so cool. I really love her exploration, or the exploration of her character in this episode, and the subtleties of her character. I am very sad to see her go. But yeah, that's specifically, I guess we can kind of bounce around, but that's kind of what I want to focus on.
Yeah, so let's dive in with the end first, right? I mean, so much happens, like Mark alluded to too, with the subtext and other things sort of that happened throughout the episode that are going to have a bigger implication going forward, but also in the climax of what happens in this episode, right? We get this big battle of dragons that happens at the end, which we've all kind of been waiting on, and especially based on the conclusion of what happens in season 1, you're kind of waiting, like you said, Mark, for the shoe to drop, so to speak. And a lot of interesting stuff here between three members of Team Green, with Kristen, Aemond, and Aegon, versus Rhaenys coming to sort of defend for Team Black. And there's a lot of emotion baked in all of these characters and their choices that they make, right? So on one hand, Kristen decides to do something that kind of makes zero sense. He's like, we're gonna go out in broad daylight and we're gonna try to take this land, and it's like Sir Gawain is the one that's like, I'm being rational here. Like, that sounds crazy. Do you not realize that there are dragons everywhere? And he's like, I have this plan. Yeah. Obviously, the plan gets fucked up because of so much of the psychology of Aegon in this episode. And there's so much to dive into with his character in this episode and the relationship with Aemond that has a crazy implication. And I don't want to necessarily dive into exactly what Aemond does yet, because there's a precursor to what led maybe to that happening. Right?
Right.
The conversation that they have at the table is such a good scene where Aemond is talking in Valyrian to Aegon to make him look stupid. And it's so interesting to see, especially with the time jump from season one and knowing that Aegon was constantly mocking Aemond as the older brother and always telling him, like, always just like kind of bullying him and pushing him around. And now Aemond is in a position where he is so much stronger, so much more cunning, smarter, more battle ready than his idiot king brother. And I love the dynamic of the table scene leading to Aemond eventually basically attacking his brother for the reason that, even though they make it seem like that's not what he's doing, that's how I took it. How did you take it, Mark?
Yeah, I just want to say I love Aegon as a character. I know some people were scared he was going to be like a Joffrey-esque character, but I absolutely love his just emotional state, how we understand that he is an idiot, he kind of is privileged and entitled to all of these things, but on the other side you realize he is just like this kid that was could have been prepared for it, but he was just grew up in a lap of luxury that he's like, well, I don't really need to take this life seriously. And now, you know, people aren't taking him seriously for good reason. But just seeing his mental state, you know, we have those small scenes where it's just him alone, just crying. His Allison walks in on him like multiple times doing this. And I just love this, this culmination of all these little scenes to him just breaking, getting drunk, getting on his dragon and saying, they don't need me. I'll show them how much they need me. And ultimately leading to his apparent demise. I still do think they intentionally did not show like him dying for a reason. I think, you know, he'll be decrepit, and obviously Aemond is very much ready to kill his own brother. Because he does walk up to him at the end with his sword like pulled out, and then Kristen's like, yo, what are you doing? And he's like, nothing. Brother's over there. so I think, yes, the breaking point of last week of him humiliating him in front of the prostitute was not good. The years of kind of being overstepped by his brother. And as we've kind of alluded to off camera, you know, Daemon and him are on the same path. You know, one was passed up, even though they have these older brothers, they were probably maybe the more expected choice. You know, Daemon is a strong, like, cunning warrior. Viserys was more of a peacemaker, and some people don't want that as a king. And Aemond has been taking life seriously this whole time while Aegon's been slacking off with his friends in the Kingsguard. So there's very much the jealousy on both ends. So I think it was on purpose, but I think that's what's interesting is that you can have those conversations.
Yeah, Vinny?
Yeah, I 100% agree. You talked about how we're seeing a lot of introspection on Aegon's character, and I love the scene in this episode, like right before his breaking point, when Allison comes in, and for the first time, you know, they have the inside the episode after the episode ends. Mm-hmm. And the showrunner was talking about how Allison currently, you know, she just had this near assassination attempt, you know, had this crazy conversation with Rhaenyra that no one knows about besides her and Rhaenyra. And her head's kind of in a whirl. And for the first time, she just is so blunt with her son. To the point where, like, she tells him, do nothing. We don't want anything from you. The best thing you could do is just do nothing. And he doesn't take that well. He gets drunk. And I found it perfectly, like, the dramatic irony behind it of, like, him getting drunk and riding into battle on top of a dragon. That whole exchange was one of my favorite parts of drama in season two thus far. That's really just kind of my sense of Aegon.
Yeah, but well, it's true. There's also a moment too in that scene which you were talking about, Vinny, where she says you're half the king that your father was. Hmm. And you said it in a good way, some might say, as a peacemaker.
Yeah.
A lot of people within the kingdom believe that he was a pushover and that he was just not strong enough. And that's why ultimately it led to his demise. And they talk about how every time he sat upon the throne, he was getting cut and things like that because he wasn't a strong enough king. And so the fact that might be in Aegon's head as well, and he's being told by his mother that he is not even half of what his father was,
yeah.
Which is, I mean, even in and of itself, he's, like you said, Mark, he's a kid still. So, like, mm-hmm. That's a lot of pressure on any kid, let alone a kid that has no confidence in himself. He just lost his own son. He's getting drunk everywhere he goes. He's now being mocked in front of his high council by his brother. He doesn't feel like he has any, even though he's the king, he has no control over what's happening in this, either you can call it war. Now it's obviously legitimate war, but you could say impending war before these events happen. So there's so much there with Aegon and what happens in the end, obviously, like Vinny had talked about, the dramatic irony in all of it. And Aemond is now in a position where he might be able to take advantage of that. On the other side, where Kristen's at now too, there's so much in that sequence that is just like dramatically and awfully beautiful. Mm-hmm. Like the sequence in general is gorgeous to look at in terms of the cinematography and the editing. But I mean, even like you just talk about the scene where Kristen walks up to the soldier and he's like, "We must go get the king," and he just melt like literally like ashes away. It's like unbelievable. Vinny, because I know you're obviously such a camera guy, like what did you think in terms of the cinematography and just like the sequence of the dragon fight and the war and all that stuff that happened in, like Mark said, the last like 20 minutes of the episode?
Yeah, absolutely stunning. Just stunning throughout. I watched what I found so interesting in the documentary series they have, the House That Dragons Built, they talked about how they mimicked the dragons after Birds of Prey and how they'd like latch their talons into each other and just swirled down. I found that epic, and the way they incorporated the CG with the practical, just the compositing of these visual effects on, don't get me wrong, a very big budget, but still a TV budget, and it's still a TV time frame and schedule, still so beautiful. And that whole Kristen sequence, I love the way they incorporated just that. They have all this fog blowing and all the smoke, and the way the light is kind of reflecting through and hitting the lenses, giving you that like sharp lens flares at moments. That whole sequence almost felt like a different episode in a good way, because it's almost like he just got knocked out. It's almost like a dream, dreamy. Yeah. And I loved the visual identity of that. And I also love the, if we're getting really like, this is very technical.
Get talk, nerdy so. About it. Get nerdy
yeah.
about it.
Yeah, so we're technical talk. I love the composition of that one shot of Kristen standing in front of a fallen Aegon and Sunfire. And there's something so beautiful of that, just the and tragic. This on near death, this dragon just center framed, and you see the silhouette of Kristen also center framed in the foreground of that.
It's like a Renaissance painting with the light coming down, the forest kind of opening up to this scene. It was that whole like end sequence of Kristen was just like fantastic.
Yeah, there's a lot. I mean, the other thing too that we haven't directly talked on, but I am curious on your guys' thought process and your perspective at this point coming off of the end of the episode, so much more damage was done to Team Green in this whole plan. I mean, they lost a ton of men, even in the fact that like Aemond trying to take, and again, you can say Aegon is a bad king, he's an immature king, all that is probably true, right? So Aemond taking over might be something that is good for Team Green. However, they lost a ton of men. Their king is now decimated. Like, again, we're not sure if he's dead. We're all assuming he's probably not, but still, he can't be in good shape. We don't know about one of their dragons. And so much has happened in such a short amount of time that actually kind of makes Team Black come out. I mean, despite the fact that they lost Rhaenys, which we can get into, which is a huge loss because she's kind of the right-hand woman of Rhaenyra, but there's so much damage done on both sides. Mark, where do you stand in terms of like the aftermath of all that happened in the last 20 minutes?
I honestly think it's the other way. I get what you're saying, but I actually think Team Black is in a worse case because they lost their most experienced dragon. Like, the dragon that's been in the most battles is now gone. We know the other dragon hasn't been claimed, that the one that flies over the sea.
Yeah.
They only have Rhaena's dragon, Baela's dragon, and that wasn't a huge dragon. Like, we have to think now in the scale of like what dragons are really size. Left. We have Vhagar, and you know, Maelys was,
who is injured, who by is, the way.
Yeah, somewhat injured.
Yes,
but like compared to like Maelys, which was their big, you know, hitter dragon, like, not really that close. I mean, Daemon's dragon obviously looks like it has the speed and agility to maybe outdo Vhagar, but I actually think Green might be in a better spot, but it definitely will have some turmoil just because there will be a power vacuum. Yeah. So I agree there, but Maelys and Rhaenys, that's a tough loss.
Yeah, it definitely is. Vinny, what do you think?
Yeah, I was leaning more towards Mark here too, because don't get me wrong, like, Green lost a lot. This is gonna be super detrimental, especially with the, well, I was gonna say the death of Aegon, but we still don't know. Either way, if next episode he comes like off the bed like, hey guys, I'm fine, no, that would just be stupid. Honestly, I'd be really mad, because at this point he should be extremely injured.
Yeah.
Extremely injured. So if he's not dead. But with the death of Rhaenys, like, she was such a heavy hitter. Like, she, even in this episode, when Rhaenyra is gone for the first half of the episode, she, you know, the council is going crazy. Like, what do we do? And she says, well, I'm trying to steer it. She's always the one trying to, if Rhaenyra is not there, or if Rhaenyra is lost in her mourning and whatnot, Rhaenys is always the one to grab the helm and try to steer the ship back into control.
Mm.
And with the death of her now, that's super detrimental, you know. I kind of want to go back to the first thing I've said on this episode, was the idea of Rhaenys as a character and her philosophy. She knew she was going to die, you know, like, she knew it, but she wanted to fight to the death. That look that she gives her dragon before going up against Vhagar. And for me, I always think back to the dragon pit scene in the first season, when Aegon is brought to the title of king, and Rhaenys is, she gets locked up in her room, and then I remember she somehow, I'm not going to lie, the writing in that particular episode of season one was a little, I remember even on our previous episode, I did criticize that, because somehow she escapes her room and then somehow gets her dragon. But the idea of that scene was that Rhaenys, if she really wanted to, like, or she basically, I'm trying to find my words here, I apologize, but she's a risk taker. She's going to stand for what she wants to fight for. There was hundreds of civilians, and Aegon is brought to king for the first time. And what does she do? She brings out her dragon in a public setting and causes collateral damage, and just kind of like is a, she makes herself a threat.
Yeah.
And we see, I view this scene as a direct continuation of that scene in season one. In the dragon pit of her character. I don't know. I just love her attitude. And I love that she was, she dies a very heroic death.
Yeah.
Which is something I love.
Well, she also embodies, like you were talking about, Vinny, so much of the structure of what Team Black needs, especially without Daemon being there. And I think it's a good transitional point to talk a little bit about Daemon and what happens with him in this episode, because Daemon is now on this new path at Harrenhal, where he is having these crazy hallucinations, which, Vinny, you and I talked about in last week's episode with Liz. Mark, you haven't had a chance to comment on it directly, but we open up the episode with a pretty trippy one in which he walks up to we get a young Millie, we get Millie Alcock returning again as young Rhaenyra, and he cuts her head off and as she's speaking to him in Valyrian, and there's so much there, and there's so much baked in Daemon dealing with this demon of he still believes that he is the rightful heir, and he believes that he would be the best leader, even though Rhaenyra is his wife and he stands by her. There's so much happening with that. Where are you standing in terms of the hallucinations and just Daemon's headspace right now? Plus, we finally get a conversation between him and the witch, who we find out her name is Alice Rivers, and we get a whole conversation there as well. So what did you think about Daemon's path this week on the episode?
Yeah, he's almost like an unreliable like character. Like there's an argument to be made that she's not even real. Like she's part of his hallucinations. You know, he was the only one that has seen her in any of the scenes. It's not like she's in the scenes with other people, I don't think.
She is in the one scene in her introduction. Yeah. But do they notice her in
Does
the
anyone
room?
Acknowledge her?
She's just pouring wine.
Okay.
Yeah. So she could I that's just my like working theory. Seems kind of like a fly on the wall, and because he's seeing so many things throughout this whole time at Harrenhal, you just can't trust what he's actually seeing.
Yeah.
And it might just be his consciousness kind of manifesting into something. I think it's just really interesting world building. Like they've talked about the curse of Harrenhal. We remember it from Game of Thrones. It was the same thing. And now seeing it from the perspective of a main character of a show, I think is really interesting. I'm more on a wait and see pattern with Daemon. I think he's like really interesting. I think what's going on is really interesting. I just don't have too many thoughts like beyond it. But I definitely want to hear what you guys thought of
Benny,
it.
What do you think?
I 100% agree. I love Daemon's character. I really love Matt Smith's performance too, and his take on the character. I always hear the quote when I'm looking into the show. George R. R. Martin always says how Daemon's his favorite Targaryen that he's written. And he always says that Daemon is equally parts heroic and villainous.
Yeah.
And I'm just excited to see where this Harrenhal saga concludes then, because as of right now, like, I can't even predict anything. I don't know what's going to happen in Harrenhal. As of right, like, Harrenhal is just this, it's an empty castle. So he's almost kind of like wasting time there, you know, aside from using it as an outpost to have other lords come meet him, like we see with the Lord Blackwood. Yeah, I'm agreeing with you, Mark. I don't know what to say. It's just kind of like wait and see as of right now with Daemon.
Yeah, well, it's definitely a lot of a waiting game in terms of what we're gonna see kind of happen next. It's not even that his character is sort of taking a back seat. It's just that he is now in a different predicament, and it's so much dealing with the internal struggle that he's had from the very beginning of the series, which we've seen with Rhaenyra. I think it's interesting. It's a really cool dynamic to bring back Millie Alcock for those scenes to sort of also resemble this version of Rhaenyra that he first was infatuated with and that he had a real belief in, like her courage at that age and just sort of the wonder that came with her as a young woman versus now who he's married to and what he's seeing unfold. So I definitely think that's interesting.
Is he dealing with the idea that he was using her just to get to the potential of being a king? Because, you know, he knew she was going to be up next since, you know, Viserys named her his heir. And obviously he was probably very mad about that, but he also, part of him was probably like, well, if I can't be the king, then maybe I'll just marry the queen to then get in that way. So I think that's another interesting thing that's in there.
There's a lot in terms of for the shoe to drop, seriously, with his character. And I'm curious what we're going to see going forward, because he's trying to build up Harrenhal again, even though it's this dilapidated, haunted mansion, essentially. And like you said, he's unreliable based on what happens in this week's episode, because there's moments where he's falling asleep and he's trying to hold his own in conversation with people, and he doesn't even realize who he's talking to. And in certain situations, we're not sure what's real and what's fake. So there's definitely a lot still left to be seen with Daemon. Jumping into Alicent now, because we get a reveal that or at least this is how I took it, but I'm sure you guys felt the same way. She's basically giving herself an abortion, and she is pregnant with what we could assume is Kristen's kid. Which, again, interesting in terms of timing. Like, I'm still so confused sometimes week to week how much time is passing.
It's true, yeah.
I don't know how they get around that because they want to cover so much in a quicker amount of time. But at the same time, like, the Thrones universe is not one to be like a few months later. Like, that's not what's going to happen. But like 2 episodes ago, she's having sex with Kristen and now she's pregnant with his kid.
Yeah.
And she basically gets this abortion tea, you can call it. Mm-hmm. And so we have that scene, but then we have a really good scene between her and Viserys, also known as Clubfoot.
Laris,
I'm sorry. No, I messed
I messed you up.
Laris. In terms of talking about her really having doubt for the first time that we see that Aegon is supposed to be the rightful heir to the throne. Vinny, what did you think about the scene in particular with her and Laris? Because I thought it was it was a really great scene between you and Mitchell and Olivia Cooke.
Yeah, what I found so fascinating about that scene was how much of a grasp Laris still has on this royal family. Has so much blackmail, and you know, he's that little finger of this era of A Song of Ice and Fire. But he has just like, he still has his hands on everyone, and I'm curious where they're gonna take his character. But I loved how they executed just the tension between that scene. And right off the bat, they establish his character as like, just as what I'm describing now, of like, he has his hand still like on chokehold on these characters. Like, Allison can't say shit, or he's gonna pull the plug and I don't know, break loose, you know.
Yeah.
He's demented too. We saw it in season one where he killed his own family in Harrenhal. So just
plus his fetishes.
Oh right.
Plus his weird fetishes that he has done with Allison. You know what I mean? So there's a lot
that's
still to drop in terms of what's going to happen with Laris. Mark, what did you think about that conversation?
I thought it was cool that without saying anything, we can assume that he probably had a rat or someone on the wall when she met with Rhaenyra, because he knew that she was somehow doubting like the Song of Ice and Fire and which Aegon Viserys was talking about. He comes in and he's basically like, it would be interesting if there was like a misunderstanding. And it seems like he was in that room at the church when they were having that conversation, which is so cool because he's the master of whispers and he's using that knowledge against everyone.
Yeah.
And yeah, he didn't have to come out and say that. He just kind of gave her that nod like, I know what you did. I know you're pregnant right now. Mm-hmm. And she's just kind of on the back foot this whole scene. What do you think about her interest in history right now? Because we see her multiple times, you know, she has all the books open in her room and then she goes to Aegon and she's like, where are all the books? Where are all the history books? Where do you think she's going with that?
I think so much of it is that she wants to understand more. And I don't think that she feels that there is anybody in her accompaniment within the realm of Team Green that can give her the information that she's seeking. Meanwhile, the person that she wants to get that information from the most is the opposing factor in Rhaenyra, which I also think is a really great opposite to the fact that we now get the reveal in this episode. And Rhaenyra's probably biggest scene in which she tells Jace the story, the Song of Ice and Fire. So in terms of the history, I think so much of it is that she's now backing herself into a corner where we're at a place where Alicent has no real support from anybody. I mean, any position in which Kristen starts to get higher up, it's going to make her seem weaker. Anything in terms of her, I mean, her son is an embarrassment to her and she doesn't believe in his leadership. And then we have now the whole thing happening with Laris, where like she, like you said, she's constantly backpedaling and she doesn't know who she can rely on and what she can do. So I think it's unique to see what's happening and what's occurring with Allison. And I think her only lifeline right now is Gwaine, which, interested to see kind of what happens with him too, because obviously we actually don't see him again after the reveal of the first dragon coming.
Yeah, we don't even know if he's still alive.
If he's still alive, exactly. So curious to see what happens there. Vinny, what did you think about Mark's question in terms of Allison and the deep dive into history and kind of trying to get her wits about her with everything going on?
Yeah, I think it's just kind of I think it's just adding on to the fact of her character that she's desperately wanting to know more. She desperately wants to get some sort of control in this situation. You know, we have this parallel between Rhaenyra and Alicent, you know, since episode one of this season, where both of them are trying so hard to deter any type of war. You know, they want peace, but they're influenced by the people around them. And also on top of that, like, at this point, it's almost inevitable that peace is just not going to happen. So that's, I just view that as Alicent's way of trying to get control back, trying so desperately to get some sort of knowledge of, like, maybe we can turn back the tides. But obviously this episode is definite that is not going to be happening.
Yeah, definitely. I don't know how much, I mean, we've covered a lot of what happens in this episode. Did you have maybe a prediction on what's going to happen next week and anything else wanted to talk about in terms of this week's episode?
I think I would love to talk about your opinions on Lord Corlys and how he fits into all this. Cause I feel like Rhaenys was kind of his anchor, and like, cause we know he has ambitions, and she was the one that kind of held him in place. Like, you know, Rhaenyra is the queen, like and he wanted his son to wed her. Obviously he got killed. So Corlys now, without Rhaenys to keep him in check, is now a very potential big player. And I think there's a really interesting scene when they're at the court at Dragonstone, and everyone's kind of like, where's Rhaenyra? She's essentially, they're kind of turning against her. They're thinking she's very weak and too cautious. And even Rhaenys can't really rein them all in. But then Corlys comes in and he says something and everyone stops and everyone respects his voice, which I think is very interesting, because I think it calls back to the original kind of conflict of the show. And that's a woman being in power in Westeros. And the second a man from a notable family came in, that kind of quelled the storm. So did you guys take it in that, like, that Westeros still, even the lords that are sworn to her, are only doing it out of honor? They don't actually maybe respect her, that honor and their word? Because I think that Corlys moment is, like, really important and maybe flew under the radar.
Yeah, no, I think that's a great point to bring up. I definitely think commanding, I mean, also the fact of what Corlys represents in terms of, like, what he controls with the sea fleet, like, that's a big thing that, even though so much of what we see in this week is aerial, we haven't really, I mean, even in, like, do we get a lot of, like, stuff on the sea in season one? I feel like we don't necessarily, right?
We have that one in the Stepstones when Daemon and currently it was young Laenor killed the Crab King.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's still, like, kind of an on foot.
Yeah, battle. And it's not as much of a Valyrian sort of thing that we're seeing, like, the power of what Corlys represents.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I think it's a good point that you bring up, Mark, because we haven't seen the stature of what he represents for Westeros yet.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's going to be really interesting going forward without Rhaenys being there to rein him in, or someone that can at least stand between him and a potential opportunity to either seize the throne or work his way into a unique position. I can maybe see him becoming the Hand, which I think could be really interesting.
Yeah.
I don't know where they're going to go with that, but I agree with what you're saying in terms of, like, everybody in the room stops when he walks in and when they're aware that he's, like, of good health or getting back to good health, and they respect what he has to say. Vinny, did you have anything on that too?
Yeah, I think for a lot of this season, there's been a lot of perspective on femininity and motherhood. And I interpreted it just as you said, Mark, where these lords still don't have respect for a woman's voice in the council, even though they're sworn to Rhaenyra. That's how I interpreted it. I'm curious to see where his character grows. I think with the death of Rhaenys, because of how connected they are, and we've been spending a lot of time with Rhaenys and Corlys for these past four episodes. Like, we just keep cutting back to them, and they had that really strong conversation with each other underneath the rain in the last episode. This, I think he's going to get really angry, and it's going to really, like, he's going to fuel a vengeance path, even more so than we already have going on currently, where, you know, Rhaenyra is kind of on this path of vengeance for her son. Now it's just gonna amplify with Corlys. I think he is gonna become hand to Rhaenyra. I think his fleet is going to play a part, but it's interesting how, because, you know, the name of the show is House of the Dragon. It's going to be a lot more dragon battles. Curious how naval warfare is going to give them a leg up in the inevitable trying to take the throne.
Yeah. You know? Don't the Greyjoys use those big ballistas from the boats in, like, at the end of Game of Thrones, and that's how they killed one of the dragons, right?
Yeah, but that wasn't developed until...
Oh, like, so that's new technology. Oh, okay, Gotcha.
Yeah. I'm not into the wits of all the... But I know what you're saying.
The inventions.
Yes.
The timeline of inventions in Westeros. Yeah, I got it.
But I think that was a great point to bring up, Mark, and I think there's just so much in this episode that we have to chew on, and it's a really, really fantastic episode. You can argue it's one of the best episodes of the series so far. A lot of stuff that happened. Vinny, was there anything else you wanted to comment on? I feel like we've covered most of it, but...
Yes, actually. I actually have a critique.
Ooh. Oh, okay. Yeah.
So, I love this episode. This is honestly a near-perfect episode for me. It gave me everything I wanted from House of the Dragon. Epic drama, nail biting, and also we finally get dragons versus dragons. So that's awesome. Mm-hmm. However, just a small one, just because it reminded me of Game of Thrones season 8, and I had a little bit of PTSD for a moment. How did you guys feel about Maelys Rhaenys's dragon getting caught in the jaws of Vhagar? Because it really reminded me of season 8 of Game of Thrones when Dany is soaring above the clouds and she just suddenly gets hit by an arrow from the Greyjoy fleet. Mm-hmm. And the showrunners, Dave and Dan, defended it as she was distracted and didn't see the Iron Fleet. Mm-hmm. And then, her dragon's dead. Yeah. That's kind of, I got vibes of that, because it's like Vhagar, this huge dragon, was somehow like hiding behind this castle and then just, pew!
Yeah.
Like, I almost wish it was less of like a shocker sneak attack, and I wish it was more like, all right, I'm going to go back into battle and I'm going to risk my life, and then they just clash it out and then she dies. You know, I feel like it would have been, don't get me wrong, it was already really heroic, and I love her unfortunate downfall, the demise of her character, but you get what I'm trying to say.
I get it. Yeah. I totally get it. It didn't necessarily bother me because it came from a place in which Vhagar was coming from behind the castle. And again, a castle is a grand structure. We don't know in terms, but I agree. I mean, Vhagar's ginormous. I mean, the shot that they have of like even the fleet looking up and seeing how massive he is, I think it's a fair criticism. It didn't necessarily completely take me out of it, but I can understand why you have the thoughts that you have. Mark, did you have something on it?
Yeah, I guess I would just say, like, yeah, Vhagar sneak attack probably doesn't align with the dragon type. But, yeah, I think at that moment I was just kind of accepting, like, she's going to die. So whatever way she dies, like, I'm just going to be like, yeah, that makes sense. I agree. It probably could have been choreographed better. But I think they maybe just wanted that, like, shock moment.
They wanted the job. They wanted the job.
And then they wanted it to be, like, perfect so that, like, the dragon had enough room to look back at her, and if they were in like a melee, they wouldn't be able to have that moment with Maelys and Rhaenys. So they were just like, well, it could just like come up and like you could still move your neck a little to see your dragon rider.
True. At least they have Rhaenys looking around too. It's not like something where it just happens out of nowhere and it's like she's not even like acknowledging the fact that Vhagar might still be around.
Right.
She's like, where the fuck is
this? I mean, dragon? Like, if we want to talk like maybe like the Game of Thrones season 8, like the conveniences, like how like all three of these dragons like started on like very different parts of the map, but like Vhagar's already hidden by the time, but he was just in a council meeting, and then like the next scene he's already like hidden in the forest perfectly. Sunfire, I mean, Obviously, Westeros could be the size of Scotland. Like, we don't actually know how big it is, and flying there might be quick for Sunfire. But again, like, all of this happens really quickly. Dragonstone was the only one that made sense because they said, like, this fort was, like, right across the water from Dragonstone. Mm. So maybe that was where maybe I was a little bit like, okay. Like, I like how they set this up, but maybe, like, the way they sequenced the scenes, it made it seem a bit too convenient that everything lined up perfectly to the plan.
I think
but
that's fair. That's still always my biggest criticism of this stuff too, which we talked about last week. It's like, I don't understand the timing of things in Thrones.
No.
I think it's hard to sort of wrap your brain around sometimes how quickly things are happening.
Yeah.
Because things take more time to unfold in Game of Thrones, and except for the last, like, season 8, like, things start to just sort of happen like this.
I think Allison actually says in this episode to Lara, she says, like, my king consort just died a couple weeks ago, like, talking about Viserys, right? Am I crazy?
I don't know. You might be right. I don't remember that.
I feel like in the scene with Lara, she says, like, I'm still grieving the death of my king from a couple weeks ago. And it's like, it's only been a couple weeks. Like, all of this has happened in a couple weeks. Like, that's kind of wild, but. Yeah, I agree. Like, the way they've presented those couple weeks is a little bit shady.
I need to dive into some Easter egg videos. Some real things to figure out all that stuff. But I feel like that's pretty much it, though, right? I mean, we basically talked about everything.
Yeah, is Kristen Cole stay hand now that Aegon's gone?
The biggest thing for me with Kristen is going to be the unique position in which he finds himself in, because we have, I believe it's episode 1, where he's having that private meeting where it's just him and Aemond.
Yeah.
So he's kind of on the side of Aemond, and then he gets put into the position of hand, which he never expected from Aegon. And now he's so protective of Aegon. And now he's in a position in which way is he going to go? Because Aegon is now obviously at least battered, maybe dead, but, like, completely decimated. And Aemond is in a position now. I mean, again, he's ruling over the biggest dragon. He's more wise to all this type of stuff. He's more battle ready. And I think he aligns more with what Kristen has become. So I'm interested to see what comes of that. Fabian Frankel's been great this season.
Great.
Like, so good this season. And Kristen, I mean, there's a lot of people online that just hate his character, but, like, he's doing a great job. That's the point of what he's doing. So that's my thoughts on it. Did you have anything on that?
No, I'm all my brain is all House of the Dragon.
We're just stoked for next week. We're very excited for next week.
So excited.
But that's probably going to do it for us here as we cover episode 4 of season 2 of House of the Dragon. Special shout out to Mark for being on the episode. First time he gets to do House of the Dragon with us. He'll be back next week as Liz and I cover episode 5. But if you guys can, please be sure to like this video if you can. We're on the road to 500 subscribers. We're growing every day. Thank you guys for checking out all the stuff we've been doing recently. We're not only covering House of the Dragon, but we're finishing up Acolyte coverage with Mark and myself. We're covering the boys, me, Vinny, and Michael. Plus, we just did The Bear, all of season 3. So you guys can check that out. Make sure you watch the show first, because that's a full spoiler discussion that we did on that as well. But we're doing a bunch of stuff, plus movie coverage. We have our review of Maxine out. We have a review of The Bike Riders. We have a review incoming that Vinny did for A Quiet Place Day 1. So there's a bunch of stuff that we're doing. So if you guys can like the video, comment your thoughts below on House of the Dragon, and be sure to subscribe to us as we're on the road to 500 subscribers. Also, you can follow us on social media. We are at CinemaWave Media and at _ Culture Wave Media on Instagram, as well as at CinemaWave Media on TikTok and Threads, and just Culture Wave on Facebook. Just signing off, I am Darian Scalamoni.
I'm Mark Iacovino.
And I'm Vinny Albano.
And we'll see you guys next time.
This is The Culture.